Bonnie and Tom Collins lost their daughter Maya after a six-year battle with acute myeloid leukemia in October of 2017 when she was 14 years old. On today's podcast, Bonnie will talk about her beloved daughter, who spread nothing but good cheer to everyone that she came in contact with, and will discuss the Live Like Maya Foundation, which she started in her honor and memory. Bonnie will also talk about the Third Eye Brewing Company, which her husband Tom started, and which gives a percentage of its earnings to childhood cancer. Maya's spirit is embedded all over this brewery, and its signature beer, named Higher Purpose, because of Maya, recently won the gold medal in the Great American Beer Festival as being the best sweet stout in the world. Thank you for listening to this podcast. It is now my pleasure to welcome Bonnie Collins to my podcast. You have a very busy schedule, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on to my show. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Mark, and I really appreciate, you know, what you're doing, creating, you know, awareness of pediatric cancer, which I think is so important. So thank you for having me today and listening to my story.
Well, you've got quite a story to tell, and it began in April of 2011. When your younger daughter, Maya, was, I believe, 7.5 at the time. She'd been suffering from some very severe nosebleeds, fatigue for months. And she was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, which was not helped by a chromosomal abnormality that she had. How long did it take between you taking her to the doctor originally and the diagnosis that she received?
Well, unfortunately, it was probably about 9 months. And in retrospect, we found out that she actually had myelodysplastic syndrome, which is in short MDS. And it's basically bone marrow failure. It's where your bone marrow just starts malfunctioning. You know, it's your cell factory. So think of it just malfunctioning and just spitting out abnormal cells left and right. Usually if you can catch MDS early enough, it's got a pretty decent cure rate. But if you let it go, it will usually turn into acute myeloid leukemia. And by that time, the prognosis kind of drops significantly. So we had taken her for about, you know, we knew something was wrong with the bloody noses. She was pale. She was tired. And we just kept taking her to the doctor, and they never ran blood work, which, you know, it's unfortunate. You know, as a mom, you trust your doctor. And I didn't even think to ask for blood work, honestly, for most of that time until my older daughter, Anna, was in a play practice rehearsal. And I was with Maya, and her nose just started gushing and clots were coming out. And I rushed her to the bathroom, and I'm pulling paper towels. And there was a fellow mom in there who was actually a nurse. And she looked at me and she said, "Have you taken her to the doctor for that?" And I said, "Oh, yes. You know, for months and months, we've been going to the doctor." And she said, "You know, you might want to have them run blood work." And I thought, oh, dear. Okay. So, you know, took her back to the pediatrician, asked them to run blood work, and they did, and all the bells and whistles. They called us back about 2 hours later, and their office was closed, so I knew that was bad. And we showed up, and it was just my doctor and his partner, and they, you know, looked her all over. They weren't exactly sure. They didn't see any tumors, and you know, she didn't present like a typical leukemia patient. Most leukemia patients will have a lot of bruising. She didn't have any bruises, so they were puzzled. So they scheduled us to go to Cincinnati Children's. It took us about 3 weeks to get in there. And by the time we got to Children's, her gums were bleeding. I knew something was very, very wrong. I was panicked at this point. And when we got there, it was discovered that she had just millions and millions of platelets, which is, again, unusual for a leukemia patient, because most of the time the cancer, which is in your marrow or in your blood, pushes out all the normal cells. So you usually have low counts. You have low white blood cells, low red blood cells, and low platelets. But Maya's platelets were crazy high, and that was because of the MDS. Her bone marrow was not producing, was producing too many platelets, and they were abnormal. And then they were, had turned, then her cells had turned cancerous. It was a mess. So pretty much we came home because they were still trying to figure out what it was. And they had sent it out for testing after they drew labs at Children's. And over the weekend they called and said, you need to pack up and bring her in. They still didn't know what type of leukemia it was, but they knew it wasn't good. And so we checked back, went back in, we checked in inpatient, and we basically didn't leave for 8 months after that. We were inpatient for 8 months.
Well, that's quite a stretch, obviously. AML is considered to be a very difficult form of leukemia in children. And of course, Sylvia already started behind the eight ball, so to speak. Did the MDS play into what the oncologist at Cincinnati Children's Hospital was saying about her treatment and her prognosis? Did that play into everything?
Yeah, when we got back all her genetic screening, we found out she did have monosomy 3, which is a chromosomal abnormality that basically makes your prognosis even worse. They still didn't really know that she had had MDS prior. I don't think they ever officially said she had it, but they're pretty sure. I don't think there's I don't know if there's even a way you can test for MDS. I think it's basically just bone marrow failure. So they pretty much suspected that because typically anybody with MDS, it turns to AML. And this monosomy 7, I'm sorry, it was monosomy 7, apologize. That monosomy 7 that she had, the chromosomal abnormality, is very typically present in a patient who has MDS. So when we... when we went back to the hospital, all the genetic testing came back, and they realized she had the monosomy 7, they suspected she had the MDS. They came to us and they said, her chances are 30%. And it's funny because when I compared it to falling down the stairs, because when we first checked in and they didn't really know what was going on, they were like, we think she has leukemia, but the cure rate for leukemia is typically around 60%. I thought, okay, we can do this. We can do this, And then they came back and they said, with all the weird stuff going on, we think she might have had MDS. So her prognosis is probably going to drop to maybe around 50%. And I was like, well, that's still 50-50. We can do that. And then when the genetic screening came back and she had monosomy 7, they said, well, now her prognosis is 30%. So we, and they basically told us her only chance for a cure would be a bone marrow transplant at that point. So that's pretty much what we did. We started the prep for that, chemo, the whole drill while we were inpatient.
Well, before you can get the bone marrow transplant, you have to be feeling okay and free. Now, you did find a donor in a young woman, I believe her name was Kaylee, but Maya was having trouble with the chemo at the time. I mean, how close was she to not even being able to have the transplant when she needed it?
So she got really sick. The chemo, they give you some of the harshest chemo known to man before you go to transplant. And it basically just depletes. They just want to blast out all your healthy cells, everything, and get you basically empty so they can fill you up with the new donor healthy cells. So she, her immune system was depleted during all this. She was very, very sick, vomiting, in pain. She was not doing well. And then on top of that, she ended up getting an infection, a lung infection. we were terrified at first. We thought it was a fungal infection, which is really bad. Especially with AML, if they get a fungal infection, it can be fatal. But luckily the labs came back from that, or the biopsy, and it wasn't a fungal infection, but it was definitely a lung infection, kind of pneumonia. She had all kinds of stuff going on in her lungs on the x-rays. So, the the bone marrow transplant doctor came in, who I now I love her to death, but I hated her then, because she came in and she sat us down and she said, you know, you have 2 weeks to go to transplant. And she's really, really sick. And she said, you know, I just don't think she's going to make it to transplant, but I'm going to give you, she said, I'm going to give you one more week and we'll reassess in 1 week. But if she's not better in a week, we're not going. And we knew if she didn't want to go to transplant, she would die. So we rallied our friends, our family, we, you know, begged, please pray, you know, rallied all our prayer warriors, and people prayed and stormed the heavens. And it was crazy. Like literally within a week, she was completely fine again. She had cleared the infection. Her lungs looked great. I mean, the bone marrow, our doctor, Dr. Jodell, is our bone marrow transplant doctor. And she walked in and she was in disbelief. She was like, I can't believe, you know, you would have never known she was sick. So it was a miracle for sure. So she did. So then she went to transplant, and after transplant, she actually did really, really good. She recovered pretty quickly, felt much better than she did with the chemo part of it. And we were sent home just a couple months later, right before the holidays.
So things were looking up, yep. But not for too long, unfortunately, because in February, she relapsed and she needed a second bone marrow transplant. This time it came from an older boy by the name of Mike. Can you tell us his story and how he and Meyer intertwined eventually at St. Jude's, how much they meant to each other, and really how much Meyer means to Mike to this day?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, we love Kaylee. We did get to meet her. I don't ever want to leave her out because she's such an important part of our family. She came to visit us a year after the transplant. You can't learn about your donor until a year later. So when we found out who she was, she came to visit and stayed with us for the weekend, walked the butterfly walk here in Ohio, which is for childhood cancer. So that was exciting. She walked with us. So we love her dearly. The story with Mike is kind of neat, though, because he worked for the American Cancer Society when he had lost his mom to breast cancer. And he first lost his mom to breast cancer, and then he started working for the American Cancer Society. And he said, you know, I just really want to do something that my mom would want, you know, to make her proud. And so he joined the bone marrow registry, which I encourage everyone to do. So it's just go to bethematch.com and order a kit. And it's a simple cheek swab, and you just mail it in and you can get on the national registry. So he did that. He sent in his kit. And when Maya got sick, he got the call, and he ended up, I think the first time he actually was called up the first time. But Kaylee was a better match for Maya. So he got called up and then turned away. So then when Maya relapsed, they called him back, and he came in and he donated his marrow. Well, he was still working for the American Cancer Society, but interestingly, he ended up, we met him a year later. We got to meet him, and he came to visit, and I think it was like 2 years later, he ended up getting a job at St. Jude. And then, you know, fast forward to us, that part of the story, we ended up at St. Jude. So that was really neat, because he would come visit Maya all the time. You know, he knew the drill about St. Jude. He was able to show us around. He took us on a tour when we first got there, and he was just a great resource to have during our journey at St. Jude. It was pretty awesome.
Now, after her second transplant, Maya was able to enjoy a pretty normal life, say from 2012 to the middle of 2016. Can you talk about that period of time? And were her doctors optimistic that the worst of the leukemia was behind her?
Yeah. I mean, she recovered and she just rebounded. She was amazing. She really, her heart was 100%. Like, she didn't really have any latent effects that a lot of, you know, transplant patients get. She had some heart issues for her prior transplants, but her heart recovered and she was doing great. She went back to ballet. She was horseback riding, she was a fish. She loved to swim. School, she was so excited to go back to school. And she just was kind of living her best life during those 4 years. So the doctors, they were like, she's amazing, you know, and we made it, we had made it 4 years, and they said, and they always had said, you know, if you can get through 4 years, your chances are going to really drop that she's going to relapse. So they thought, you know, we're good to go. And then lo and behold, you know, about a couple months after that, after her 4 month, you know, checkup, she came into the office. I was in here working, and she said, Mom, I don't feel good. And I said, oh no, are you getting a cold? Or, you know, no, Mom, I don't feel good. And, you know, she knew at that point. She was old enough. She was what, 11, 12, I think, at 12, I think at that point. So she knew her body. She knew how it felt to have cancer, and she knew. And, you know, my heart sunk, and I said, all right, let's call the doctors. Let's get you in for labs. And took her, and, just, you know, lo and behold, she had relapsed again. She knew it.
The feeling you had when that happened must have been unimaginable. Now, she had to have a third transplant. This time was with your husband Tom's cells, and it was at St. Jude's. You call St. Jude's the Disney of all hospitals. Can you talk about your experience there, not only from a medical point of view, but also about the people you met and developed relationships with?
Yeah, St. Jude's it'll always hold a special place in my heart. I mean, Cincinnati Children's is wonderful too. I love my doctors there. But St. Jude, I always said, it is like the Disney of all hospitals, but it's like a campus. So when you arrive, it seems small. I mean, it's bigger than it looks, but you know, you enter the gates, you're kind of in a little protective cocoon of the gates when you walk in. And everybody in St. Jude's a family. And I'll never forget when we first arrived. You know, it was late. We had driven from Ohio to Memphis, because St. Jude's in Memphis. A lot of people don't know that. And when we walked in, it's the old building. You know, Danny Thomas, a lot of you guys know Danny Thomas. He's famous actor and singer. He started St. Jude, and it's the original building that he erected. So it's really small, and it's sweet. It's got, the walls are painted, and it's just very bright and cheery. And the security guards were there. It was totally empty, which was so weird because, you know, when you walk around Cincinnati Children's, it's like a big hospital. You don't have just oncology. You have ER and ICU and all the different places. So it's always hustling and bustling. In the middle of the night, you know, Maya and I would take laps around the hospital, and there'd be people everywhere. But at St. Jude, it's different. It's just cancer patients. And at night, they all go back to their, whether they're staying, you know, at Target House, which is fully furnished apartments that St. Jude pays for, or, I mean, there's other apartments too. We did like Ronald McDonald, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, when you walk in, it's very quiet, and they just greeted you. They were very cheery, and they sent us back to the med room, and there was like nobody back there. I think there were maybe two other patients back there at the time. It was super quiet. They took her labs. They got us all ready. Checked us into a hotel for temporary stay until they found us a permanent apartment there. And it's just the families that we've met there, you know, you just form these bonds because you're all going through the same thing. And it's just the hardest time of your entire life. And you don't know anybody. And a lot of people, I was there, just me and Maya. Tom had to stay home, my husband, with our daughter, Anna, because she was still in school and he was still working. So you don't know anybody. So there's a lot of just moms with their children. Or, you know, there are some moms and dads who literally just quit their jobs and move to St. Jude because they're there for years for treatment. But you just form these bonds. And the cool thing too about St. Jude is that, you know, cancer doesn't discriminate. There were Amish people. I had never met an Amish person before, and they were so nice. And you literally sit down in the cafeteria and you have a meal with somebody from a completely different culture or ethnicity, which was so neat. And that's kind of, that was Danny Thomas's plan from the get-go. It was during segregation times when he built the hospital, and he really wanted everybody to sit together and eat, and even the doctors. And he planned out the cafeteria at St. Jude. So everybody sits together. The doctors come in and, what was the doctor? There was a doctor there. It's going to come to me. He had a funny little name, but he's world famous. I mean, they say he's one of the ones who has increased the rate of the cure for leukemia to 60% from 20. He would literally just, and so he's famous. And so he'd walk in and everybody would be like, there he is. And he would sit down in the cafeteria and just eat with patients. It was the coolest thing. So That's just one thing. It's just St. Jude just holds a special place in my heart because it's such a wonderful place. And back to the Disney of all hospitals, when you walk the halls of St. Jude, there's clowns and there's therapy dogs and crafts. They have crafts like through the hospital. So, you know, if Maya and I were waiting for an appointment, because there is a lot of waiting. You have to wait for this appointment, wait for that appointment. It's back-to-back appointments. And it gets boring. And so they would literally have like crafts set up in the hallways and you just go and sit down and Maya would do a craft while she waited until they called us for an appointment. So it really, you know, I have to say when you're going through the hardest part of your time or of your life, St. Jude makes it so much more bearable and they actually make it fun. I mean, the kids had fun and the kids bounce back too. Like the things they dance, they're hooked up to their chemo poles and they're dancing around. And I mean, kids are amazing when they go through cancer. It's inspiring and it's a beautiful thing. I mean, they're just, kids are amazingly resilient, you know? So.
No question about that. Now, how long did Maya spend you and Maya spend up in Memphis?
So we were there all in total a year and a half. From the night we checked in, we ended up staying at Target House. It was a fully furnished apartment that was completely paid for. It was wonderful. So Maya ended up doing a haploidentical transplant. Basically, the Cincinnati Children said they would do a third transplant, but it would be with another non-related donor. And they said, you know, your outcome's probably going to be the same. So they encouraged us to look into some trials. And I had already befriended a few people who had transplants or multiple transplants at St. Jude, including Brendan Simpkins. I had met his mom and he had had 4 bone marrow transplants in 18 months. It's insane. And he's actually still alive to tell the tale. I mean, it's incredible. His story is incredible. They actually wrote a book about him. I encourage everybody to read it because it's very inspiring. But he had 4 transplants in 18 months. And so when I talked to his mom, she really encouraged me to call St. Jude. Now, St. Jude does not take everybody. I think a lot of people think that. They are a research hospital. So they only take people who will fall into their trials. So luckily, Maya's leukemia did actually fall into one of their transplant trials for a haploidentical transplant. So typically, when you do a transplant, you always want to be this close to the donor, matched as close to the donor as possible. Everybody has your 50% matched to your parent, right? So 50% of you is your dad, 50% of you is your mom. So that's really not a very close match. But what St. Jude has done is they found that they can fine tune the transplant with a parent. So if you receive, you know, as Maya did, she received her dad's cells. Well, that's half of her. And typically her body's going to reject that and it would kill her. But St. Jude has created, with medicine and different techniques, they're able to keep what they call the graft versus host disease, which is where your body attacks the donor. And they can keep that at bay, and they kind of keep it to like a smoldering fire, they call it, to where the new donor cells come in and they come in with a vengeance. And if they see an infection, you know, they're going to attack that infection because that's what they do. They're immune cells. Well, they'll also attack the leukemia. So what St. Jude has found is that if they can keep the patient from getting too much of that graft versus host disease, if they can just keep it just, you know, to a bare minimum, just a tiny bit, that those donor cells, dad or mom cells, will come in and attack and kill that leukemia. And if all goes well, the patient will survive and the cure rate is much higher, but the risks are also much higher. So obviously for Maya, we didn't really have any other options. So we kind of had to take the risk. And they felt that she was healthy enough that if she did get some graft versus host, she'd be okay. And so that's kind of what we did. We gave her daddy's cells.
Okay, so a few months after the third transplant, Maya began to develop complications. And finally, on October 3rd of 2017, at the age of 14, Maya passed away. Did she have any type of decent quality of life, say, in the last 6 months or so?
Yeah, so she... after the transplant, she actually did really well after the haplo. She really bounced back and was looking so good and we were getting ready to get her home. But they do what they call a chimerism test. And a chimerism test is where they can detect how much of the new donor cells are in her body or her marrow, right? So Children's is not as strict as St. Jude. Children's says, you know, if she's 98 or above percent and or above donor cells, we're fine with that because there's 2% usually that's just going to be garbage that we can't detect. It's just, there's so many different details and it's so minute that 2% we're okay with as long as it doesn't drop below 98%. St. Jude's much more strict. St. Jude said they wanted her chimerism to be, I think they said like 99.98%. It was crazy. So we were 100% for a while with her. And they do the chimerism each month and then it kind of, they stat and then it gets longer and longer as she's doing well, they do it less and less. But so after, I think a couple months, her chimerism kind of dropped. I think it dropped to like 99.99% and it kind of hovered there. And then it dropped down to 99.8 and they said, we're getting a little concerned. And they said, we want to do a donor boost. So what they do is they would take more daddy's cells and put them in her, hoping that it would go in. And if there is any cancer floating around, her bad cells were coming back, that it would attack. So what happened was she actually was fighting a cold. And I asked them, I said, you know, I don't know if I feel comfortable with this. Like, can we just hold off? And they said, you know, it'll be fine. We've done this before with kids with colds before. So they did. They gave her the donor boost and it just all hell broke loose. So basically what happened, we think, and they don't know for sure, but they think what happens is that the donor cells went in, you know, they're immune cells. So they saw an infection. She had it in her lungs and it went in and it just attacked her lungs. And so basically she started having trouble breathing. She got weak. She did actually develop graft versus host disease at that point because just everything was going haywire. So she developed this horrible rash all over her body. Her toenails fell off. It was horrible. And they had to increase her, you know, anti-rejection meds, which also drops her immunity even more, which means she couldn't fight the infection as well. And it was just crazy. And then when she got the boost, it was, you know, whatever, all hell broke loose. So, she ended up passing away of lung damage. She ended up getting intubated and we couldn't take her off the vent. So that's what happened in the end.
You started the Live Like Maya Foundation, obviously in honor and memory of your daughter. When did you launch the foundation and how difficult was it to do this from an emotional point of view?
Well, I really, you know, I wasn't really going to do it. Mason, where we live, is amazing. It's the most incredible town. They just rallied around us. And I mean, I know that happens in other towns too, but you know, the homecoming game, Maya's favorite color was blue. So the homecoming game was, everybody wore blue. They painted Maya, the football players had Maya on their helmets and on their shoes and blue laces on their shoes. And the cheerleaders, they, you know, had fireworks that were blue. It was crazy. It was wonderful. And so, you know, and they dedicated a Maya Collins Day, actually when she was in the ICU intubated, just a couple of days before she passed away, they dedicated September. It was like, I think it was September 10th. They designated Maya Collins Day in Mason, which was pretty amazing. So anyway, I had this huge village and friends and family kept saying, you should, you know, you've got this great following. You should really start a nonprofit. And I was like, oh, and I talked to other people who had started nonprofits and they were like, oh, it's hard, you know, to keep up. People get tired. It's donor fatigue. You know, people get, you know, time goes on and people forget and it's hard to keep the momentum going. Right. So, but after talking to friends and family, they just kept encouraging me. So I thought, okay. And I, on the same page, I really wanted to do something to make a difference in Maya's memory. I didn't want her memory just to be her life just to be for nothing or her death. You know, I just wanted to make something good out of her death. You know, on another note, Maya always did random acts of kindnesses, right? So at St. Jude, she would leave toys behind, like hide toys all over the hospital for kids to find. She bought a homeless person when we were on the way to clinic one day. We left Target House and there was a homeless person on the side of the road and she wanted me to drive in and get him a meal. So we stopped in and got him a Happy Meal or a I don't know, a happy breakfast or whatever. And I'll never forget rolling down the window, and he walked up to the window, and here she is bald, and she hands him her meal, the meal. And she says to him, "I'll pray for you." And he looked at her and he said, "I'll pray for you back." And I just, and because he knew, you know, with her being bald, and everybody in Memphis knows St. Jude, all the little, you know, bald kids. So he knew, and I'll never forget that. So I knew I wanted to do something for the good, something that would change our community, have a ripple effect. And so I said, you know what, let's do it. So I, you know, rallied, my friends were so great. They joined, they're on my board. They helped me get it up and going. And it's been amazing. And I'll be honest, I'm glad I did it. It's a lot of work. It's, you know, it's constant work, but, it's Band-Aid for my soul. Julie Gio, I know you interviewed her. She says doing good when you've lost a child is Band-Aid for the soul. And that's so, I mean, that was it. That nailed it on the head for me. I'm like, yes, that's it. It just warms my heart and makes me feel better about what happened, if that makes any sense.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, obviously. And the fact, I read about the story about the homeless man. I think that she bought bought him a biscuit.
Yeah, that's right. It was a sausage biscuit. Yep. And hash browns. I think she got hash browns.
Well, for someone who's out in the street, getting a biscuit from a stranger and hash browns is, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, you know, really for them.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit? I know about the Random Acts of Kindness, and there are other things we're going to get into about the foundation, but can you talk about Maya, the person?
So Maya did, she was feisty. Don't get me wrong. Like, she was a sassy thing, but she was hilarious. She was funny. I mean, if you watch videos of her, she started a vlog. I tell everybody, go to her vlog. It's m.journey.c. So M for Maya, C for Collins, Journey in the Middle. You can go to YouTube and type that in and find her vlogs. She vlogged her journey at St. Jude. It's hysterical. Like, she was the funniest thing. And it's neat to actually watch going through St. Jude through the eyes of the patient, through the eyes of the kid. It's really interesting, I think. And you can really see kind of the inside scoop of St. Jude. You can see the hallways and everything. But she did these vlogs as much as she could. Near the end, they got fewer and far between because she felt too sick. But she was funny, and she was, you know, I'll never forget, her favorite thing to do was play bingo. Target House had bingo. That's why a couple of my fundraisers have bingo involved. At Target House, they had bingo once a month in the cafeteria, and full of toys. The kids would win and they get to pick out a toy. Loved that. She loved that. But it was right before we ended up in the ICU at the end. She was having trouble breathing. I actually had just asked my friend, she was a nurse, to borrow her pulse ox. And we had just seen right before we went down for bingo that Maya was like 80 in the 80s. And my friend was like, you need to probably check her in tomorrow morning. And that's when it went downhill from there. But we were wheeling down to bingo, and she was in her wheelchair because she was too tired. She couldn't breathe very well. And there was another patient there, a brain cancer patient. And she was struggling. She was in pain. She was crying. And Maya kept winning. She was always lucky too. She did the claw machine, and she'd come back with her hands full of toys or all the trinkets you get out of the claw machine. But she kept winning at bingo, and this poor girl wasn't winning. And the girl was getting more upset. And Maya said, "Mom, I just want to give her," because they would get these little tickets that they could redeem for toys. "I want to give her a ticket." And I'm like, "Well, go for it." And so she went over, and I'll never forget, she kind of put her hand on the girl's back and she said, "I want you to have my ticket." And the girl smiled. But that was just Maya. Like, she just wanted everybody to feel better. And she really, you know, she always cared for others over her. You know, she was an amazing kid. She really was.
One of the other staples about the foundation is Maya's kindness cards. And before I get into that specifically, because your older daughter, Anna, played a role in that. And I'd like to ask you about Anna. Now, she was the older sister. She had to watch her younger sister go through all this. How is that for her? And even now, it's been 4 years since Maya passed away, but how did she do through this whole experience?
So Anna struggled a lot. It was really, really hard for her. She wanted to, it was hard for her because I left. I was with Maya at St. Jude. So that was her senior, you know, junior and senior year. Is that right? Or was it her junior year? I don't know. I get all my dates confused, but like she went to homecoming and she was homecoming princess. So it was her junior year. She was homecoming princess and, you know, I missed a lot of that stuff. She turned 16 and got a car and I had to watch it on Zoom. My husband gave her a car with a big bow on top and Maya and I sat and watched it from Memphis. So I feel like I missed so many important milestones for her. And I think that was really hard, but she was a trooper. Like she never complained. And she continued to keep her grades up and she continued to be just this amazing kid. And it's really changed her life. Well, it's changed all of our lives, obviously, but it has made her, and she's always been a good kid. So I don't want to say that just this did it, but it has made her the most incredible kid because she just has like a heart of gold. And I could talk about it and I'll start crying because there's things that she says to me sometimes and I'm just like, I can't believe. Okay, I'll try to say this without crying. She said to me the other day, she caregives. Okay, she's in nursing now. And the whole reason why she got into nursing was because of our experience at, you know, St. Jude, the hospital. She loved the nurses. She became friends with them. They sent her, when she decided to become a nurse, they sent her her first real stethoscope. It's blue and it's got a little silver ring around the top of it with Maya is inscribed on it. And those were the nurses from St. Jude that pulled together and sent her the stethoscope. So she decided to be a nurse. She at first wanted to go into oncology, but she decided it was too close to home. She was kind of having a little PTSD. So she's really interested right now in labor and delivery. But anyway, she caregives. And she caregives for this girl who, her name's Grace. She's amazing also. And she's lost mobility from the neck down. So she's in a wheelchair. Anna spends so much time with her, took her to the fireworks. And you know, backtrack a little bit. Maya actually was friends with Grace way back. And Maya would hang out with Grace on the playground because Grace, during school, sometimes Grace would sit and be in her wheelchair by herself while the kids were playing. And Maya felt bad. So she would hang out with Grace. So fast forward to now, Grace is now, Anna is now caregiving for Grace. And she spent New Year's with Grace. She took Grace to see the fireworks and all of these things. She spends all this time with Grace. And I said to her one day, I said, you know, Anna, you know, you could be at parties, you know, in college with your friends, you know, but you're choosing to spend time with Grace, go to the, you know, fireworks with her, spend New Year's with her. You know, I'm just curious, like, why? I'm just so amazed. And she said to me, Mom, it's a privilege to have the things, to have our health and to have the things that we have. We are privileged as humans, and it is our job as humans to take care of the people who don't have that privilege. And she said, I will always be this way. I will always caregive for other people. And we all should be that way. And she said, I'm honestly sad that we're not, but I feel just that it's my privilege as a healthy, functioning human adult to take care of others, and that to me, that just sums up Anna. Like she's just the most caring, amazing human. And I do think, you know, a lot of this did stem from what we went through with Maya. I do think initially she was always like this, but I think this just added to it. And it's, our family has just found so much beauty. And I'm going to quote somebody else, a friend of mine, Holly, who lost her daughter. She said, it's beauty from the ashes, which is so perfect because there is so much beauty that comes from the ashes. I mean, it was such a horrible situation, but we have met the most amazing people. I mean, we've become better people. You know, I was so, you know, wrapped up in having a big house and a big, nice car and all these things. And this stopped us in our tracks, totally stopped us in our tracks. And now I could care less. Our house is a disaster and it hasn't been updated in years. And I don't care. It's not important anymore, you know, and you just really realize what's important in life. And I wish everybody could, you know, I say sometimes, why don't they, you know, to my husband, why don't they get it? Why don't they do more for the community or whatever? And my husband says, you know what? Be happy for them. Be happy that they have this life that's perfect or seemingly perfect. I know that's not true, but be happy that they don't have a horrible situation that's smacking them into reality as to what's really important. So I guess he has a point, you know, but I do think that this experience has made us better people, for sure.
Well, it's made you're incredible people, obviously, and Anna certainly has learned her lessons very well. Now, the kindness cards was something that we're going to be basically for the 25 days of the Christmas season, but they develop into more than that. Can you talk about?
Yes, so we started the kindness cards, and it was, I have to say, we stole the idea from a friend. We have friends who lost, they had a daughter, Maya. It's spelled different, M-Y-A. Our daughter is M-A-Y-A. But their daughter passed away at St. Jude before our daughter. And they started that. I actually am a graphic designer, so I designed their kindness cards, and I thought, this is such a great idea. So I asked her, I said, do you mind if we steal your idea for Maya? And she was like, of course, that's totally fine. So we started in Mason. They live in New Jersey, but we started we call it the kindness movement. And it was right around the holidays because Maya passed away in October. So by the time I was kind of getting up and functioning again, it was getting close to the holidays. And so I knew I had to do something. So I created these kindness cards. And basically it just says on the card, you know, you hand it to someone and you say, you know, do an act of kindness, buy someone a coffee, whatever, and ask them to take the card and pay it forward. And our hope is that, you know, the cards will just keep going and keep going and keep going and spread kindness like a ripple effect. And it really took off. The cards, whenever I ended up shipping them all over the United States, and somebody in Singapore, like, it was crazy. Somebody in Singapore was in a Starbucks in Singapore and got a kindness card and wrote on we have a Facebook page. It's Maya's Kindness Cards. So if anybody wants to go up there and check it out. But she had posted on there that she was having a really bad day. She was stressed out with work. She was on her laptop. Somebody came and I think they gave her a coffee. What did they do? They ended up giving her a coffee or a gift card or something. And she was kind of irritated, like, what do you want? And then when she read the Maya Kindness card, she said, you know what? All of my stress just left. And she realized all the things I'm worrying about are just not important. What's really important is this, like doing kindness, having a good health, and being a good person. So I thought that was pretty neat.
Absolutely is. Now, your family lives in Mason, Ohio, which is about 20 miles outside of Cincinnati. Another part of your foundation is the college scholarships that you award to Mason High School graduates under the Pay It Forward program. Can you talk about these scholarships and what the requirement is to qualify for one of them?
So it's basically, and we try to keep it to Mason City, to Mason schools, since that's where mine went. But it would be anybody in the Mason schools who does, you know, basically good for the community, whether it be, I can't remember how we phrased it on the website, but you know, anybody who does an act of good, you know, just good, just basically a good person who does good for the community, takes care of a family member, takes care of a friend, you know, that kind of a thing. It just has to kind of evolve around kindness and goodwill, and somebody who kind of embodies Maya's spirit of kindness and goodwill. And this year we had a lot of really, really good applicants. It was pretty tough. But we ended up, and we were really only going to give one scholarship away, and we ended up giving away three. So that was pretty cool. We just want to better the community, you know, through Maya, through her kindness, and we just want to make the community a better place.
Now, you have a lot going on with your foundation in other areas, such as you've got outdoor movie night coming up. Yep. You've got the bourbon raffle coming up. Yep. And of course, with Maya liking bingo so much, you've got a drag bingo night. Now, this is all coming up in the next month or so. So you're going to be quite busy.
Yeah, we just had a game night. We had a family-friendly game night a month ago that sold out. We raised $6,000. So that was pretty fun. And we do that every year at a local brewery. And it's just, it's kind of, we do it just like they did at Target House. So we have tables full of toys, gift cards. Every time somebody yells a bingo, you know, they win a prize. And we just want every kid to walk out with a prize. So that's always a really fun event. So that was last month. This month we have, so on Saturday we have our family outdoor movie night at our brewery. We own a brewery. That's a side note. We can talk about that later. But at our brewery, and it's we're going to have a huge, we're going to watch The Sandlot on a big screen under the stars. We're going to have a band before that. So it's going to be lots of raffles and auction items and all that good stuff. So it'll be fun. And then drag bingo, we did that 2 years ago pre-COVID. And it was crazy. The ladies loved it. It's a designer purse bag bingo. This year we're going to have a Louis Vuitton. This guy comes from Columbus. His name's Kevin. He's actually an actor who plays a drag queen. But and on a side note, he is the North America's leading top Tupperware sales person. So he's hilarious. So he comes, he kind of puts on an act. He's funny. He sells his Tupperware. And then we, each prize is a really nice designer purse. And we're going to have a Louis Vuitton raffle at the end of the night. So that's always, that's kind of like one of our biggest events of the year. And then earlier this year in May, we had our Mother's Day kindness brunch. And we partnered with Holly. She's the one who stated the beauty from the ashes. She lost her daughter Sable tragically to the flu and strep throat, they think. It was awful. But anyway, so she and I have become friends. She's from Mason. So the two of us got together and we did a fundraiser for Children's Hospital and donated $20,000 to Children's Hospital. And then the game night went for St. Jude, was for St. Jude. And then the drag bingo will probably also be for St. Jude. So, and on a side note, I know I'm speaking a lot, I'm sorry. Maya's best friend, I have to throw this out, ran for student of the year for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society this year. And she's probably going to kill me. I'm going to get the number wrong, but she raised $160,000 in like 6 weeks. I'm pretty sure it was 160 when all was said and done, but in honor of Maya, and she won and she blew away all the records in Cincinnati. So that was super exciting. So I'm telling you, Maya's just, she's changing the world. She's amazing.
Well, your fund, I mean, that $160,000 is absolutely unheard of.
Yeah.
Someone of any age, really.
I know.
But that's fantastic. Now, you mentioned your brewery.
Yeah.
And it is called the Third Eye Brewing Company. Now, your husband's name is Tom.
Yep.
With the last name of Collins. So what better name to have when you're interested in a brewery, although it's, of course, different than a mixed drink, but still the concept is the same. So Tom decided he always had a goal to start or own a brewery. After Maya passed away, he decided to get, I know it was a long process to get the brewery up and running.
Yeah.
But one of the goals was to use it as a fundraising tool for the Live Like Maya Foundation. The motto at the brewery is live life, do good, drink beer. Well, the first two definitely were Maya. Because she lived her life as best she can. She did good. I don't think she was old enough for the time to drink beer.
Nope.
But so 10% of what is received goes towards childhood cancer. You mentioned that Maya's spirit is a huge part of the brewery. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So Tom, you know, always wanted to open a brewery, but she was always in the hospital, in and out, relapsing. When we were at St. Jude, I think it was therapeutic for him. He'd be down in his basement, you know, brewing beer, and his brother would join him. And I think they just started talking. They were like, we really want to open a brewery. And at first I was against it. I was like, oh my gosh, like I'll never see you. You'll be there all the time. We'll be divorced. Like, I don't want that. But when Maya finally passed away, he came to me, he approached me again and he said, you know, life's short. I really want to do this. This is my dream. I'm like, you know what? Go for it. Let's do it. So he met a couple other guys. They partnered. There's five partners total. And they started Third Eye Brewing Company. They built it from the ground up and it's Tom's a designer. My husband's a designer. So he designed the whole thing. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful on the inside. And we really truly believe, you know, the chef, it's kind of a long sorted story, but we feel like Maya has pulled people in to make us a success. We have this incredible chef. He's worked in, you know, Houston and, NOLA and, Destin at these really nice fancy restaurants. We thought he was probably overqualified, but luckily for us, he hadn't found a job yet because of COVID. When he came back to Mason, he moved back to Mason. So he was excited to start a brewery and start a kitchen on his own. Then we ended up with Kelly Montgomery, who is one of the top brewers in Cincinnati. We call him the Beer Whisperer because he wins awards constantly. He was looking for a new place to start up, so we were excited to have him. So, and I really feel like the chef actually says he dreams about Maya and he's never met her. So that's, I just feel like she's made this place what it is. I mean, you know, obviously not just Maya. We have amazing employees. We have an amazing chef, blah, blah, blah. But I think Maya's spirit, you know, she sprinkles pixie dust on the brewery and makes things happen. And so, you know, I have to throw out the beer that, so we knew we wanted one of the beers to go towards the foundation and we weren't sure which beer it was going to be. Our brewers were great. We have two brewers too. We also have a female brewer. Her name is Chloe, which she's amazing, which is super exciting to have a female brewer because that's pretty unusual. So Kelly and Chloe were working on beers and we were tasting them in the beginning, trying to figure out which beer would be the perfect Maya beer. And Kelly presents us with this sweet stout and it was brown. Maya loved poop emojis. You know, she had this funny sense of humor and all the little fart things you sit on and they make those fart sounds. She loved those things. Whoopee cushions, that's what they are. So when we saw the color, we're like, okay, this is Maya. And it looked like chocolate. And so when you taste it, it's very sweet and it almost does have a little bit of a chocolatey taste. And Tom looked at me and he said, oh my gosh, I think this would be, if Maya were to drink beer, she would really like this beer. So we christened it the Maya beer and we named it Higher Purpose. Last year it won a gold at the U.S. Open Beer Championship. And then this year, though, it won again. And it's in September. That's the cool thing, too, which is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. And most people know that gold is the color for childhood cancer. So it won a U.S. Open Beer Championship award a couple weeks ago. But then this past weekend on Friday, we were really nervous because it had been, and we had entered it in the Great American Beer Festival competition. And that is a world-class competition. So we entered it and we were so excited Friday night when we found out it won a gold. So it is the best sweet stout in all the world. And I'm like, how perfect is that? And that happened. And it was actually Maya's birthday weekend. Her birthday, that happened on Friday and Maya's birthday was on Sunday. So the timing was just perfect. And I know Maya had her little she was sprinkling her pixie dust again to make all that happen.
You just said that your birthday was 3 days, was on the 12th?
Maya's birthday.
I was going to say that. That's what I thought because yeah. As a birthday present to Maya.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It was totally her doing, I feel like, for sure.
There's absolutely no doubt that the spirit that she had and still has is all throughout pretty much everything that you do, which of course is important. Now, I just mentioned Maya's birthday, which should have been obviously on September 12th. She would have been 18 years old. Do you agree with me that right this minute, she is looking down on you, Anna, and Tom, smiling at you and telling you that everything that you have done in honoring her and her memory has been good?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, even winning that award for the beer, I was like, that is totally her giving us her approval, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, I can't just say it's just Maya. We have incredible brewers. I got to give them credit too. But I just know that, you know, things just fall into place now. Like I literally live my life like, okay, Maya, what do you want me to do? Just tell me, just guide me. Cause I feel like I do. I feel like she guides us. And things fall into place. You know, I'll have a fundraiser and I'll be so nervous and I'm like, nobody's buying tickets. And my husband's like, would you just calm down? If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And it always works out. We sold out at the last one at the last minute. It was kind of everybody, I think with COVID too, people are nervous. But yeah, I just feel like she just kind of guides me. So it's kind of a feeling of peace I have now. I'm just like, I worry about stuff, but I'm kind of like, you know, it's Maya just, she just guides us and things fall into place and everything works out and what's meant to be is meant to be. And I think she's really got a big part in that.
Well, you know, the perspective that you have now in life is certainly so different than before this happened. And Maya has taught you some great lessons, which you obviously have learned well and are going to be practicing really what she would want for many years to come. Now, as we come to the end of this podcast, where can people get in touch with you? I know you mentioned a couple of sites before.
Yeah.
First of all, to learn more about Maya, the, of course, your Live Like Maya Foundation and Third Eye Brewing Company. Where would people go for that?
So Third Eye Brewing, you can just find us online. It's thirdeyebrewingco.com or on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, Third Eye Brewing. And then I actually have kind of a blog that I do. I haven't been keeping up with it as I usually do, but you can look, you can find me as The Brewery Wife on Facebook and Instagram. And then the foundation is the Live Like Maya Foundation at livelikemaya.org. And you can read about our mission. We support pediatric cancer families who have children, and we support research. So you can read our mission and what we do there. We're also on social media, you know, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook under Live Like Maya. And yeah, and I'm a graphic designer. So if anybody ever needs graphic design too, I'm Bonnie Collins Design. A little bit of everything. Got my hands on a little bit of everything. So
you have a certainly a full plate. And I want to thank you very much for taking the time to come on to my show, talk about Maya, talk about that experience, what she meant to everyone that knew her, and what you've been able to do along with Tom and Anna and many others to keep her memory alive and to have this, you know, great foundation, which is really probably at its infancy. Mm-hmm. When you think about all the events that you've got coming up, the fundraising that you're doing, the grants that are coming, and I want to wish you the best of luck as time goes on.
Thanks, Mark. I'm so grateful for you interviewing me and getting the word out and spreading awareness and all of that. I'm really appreciative.
Well, it was great to have you, and you have a great day.
You too, Mark. Thank you.
Thanks. Maya Collins gave as much as she could to everyone in her far too brief 14-year lifespan. As we just heard, her mother Bonnie has taken the worst possible scenario and, with inspiration from the life that her daughter lived, created both a nonprofit in the Live Like Maya Foundation and, with her husband Tom, a for-profit venture that at its very essence has the life of Maya and the cause of pediatric cancer as a central principle. This is Mark Levine. And please tune in on Thursday when I will speak with Lauren Badeski, who survived her June 2012 diagnosis of stage 4 neuroblastoma, did great work for the St. Baldrick's Foundation, and is now a medical student at the Lewis Katz School of Medicine at Temple University.